Practical Work on Self, Chapter 5, Work Wish. We can begin to unify ourselves by creating a special centrum of gravity called our work wish. In the ordinary, unevolved human biological machine, because its sense of itself is a vague concatenation of all its isolated fragmentary identities, there is no unity which always feels the same about every issue. Sometimes we feel one way about something, and the very next moment we feel entirely different about it. Our lack of unity produces in us a corresponding lack of will. In mechanical man, nothing provides a permanent centrum of gravity for unity. We can make the beginning of unity by creating in ourselves a special temporary centrum of gravity, which we can call our work wish. A work wish is an artificial aim which has become, of course only temporarily, more important than anything else in life, at least until it has satisfied our purpose, which is the early development of unity and will. For the purpose of this experiment, it is necessary that we learn to do everything only in relation to this special artificial work wish. If we were to continue life in the ordinary way, all our conflicting inner impulses would eventually neutralize each other into apathy or some vague monomaniacal compulsion, until finally, under the dreadful spell of senile psychosis, we would drift helplessly and aimlessly toward the quick brown fox of ordinary death, like lazy dogs. We survive only so long as we have the ability to wish. The continued survival of our wishing has the unique property of allowing us to contemplate our work. But for this aim to have any real effect, whatever wish we have formulated must be greater than, and have real existence beyond, our own short and insignificant lives. Ordinary desires are much smaller than ourselves, so we must discover something which is greater. Unfortunately, the majority of our understanding is limited to what is smaller than ourselves. If we could see the personality of the machine dissected into its primary component parts, we would see a complex inner disorganization of many fragmentary identities, each with its own power, thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and in particular, its own manifestations. Each of these fragmentary identities is convinced that it is able to act independently and has complete authority over the biological machine, and they are all convinced of their unique right to call themselves I when referring to the overall identity of the human biological machine. In this complex disorganization of parts, unity can only come as a result of a serious effort over a long period of time to blend its parts into one balanced whole. In mechanical life, such blending can never happen just by accident. Only by intentional inner alchemy can we force such a blending of these isolated fragments of the machine to occur, which in turn produces a machine able to function in the work. Without unity, the machine would soon wander into distractions, making our continued work in the work unreliable and eventually impossible. To begin the inner alchemical process, we must start with an imaginary aim which we hope, by repetition over a long period of time, will someday become real. This can bring no result if we try it just once or twice. We must understand exactly what it is that we are trying to do. Knowledge and understanding, data and experience, each hand washes the other. Only with a clear idea of our aim can a change be made by imaginary beginning efforts. An imaginary effort can become a real effort only drop by drop, as in any distillation process. Before this experiment, and before any experiment from now on, we should always remember to wish that our efforts be for the benefit of all beings everywhere. To make a wish of greater force than just wishing for ourselves. The effectiveness of our wish depends on whether we're able to collect the force of necessity. This wishing for all, made inside ourselves, can connect us someday with the mystical body of Christ, which always exists outside time itself through all ages, including long before the man called Jesus lived and died. The sly man may or may not have this or that attainment, but one thing is certain, by himself, because he has attained impartiality, even toward his own aims, he has no necessity of his own. Yet at the same time, he may have a soul which suffers unutterably each additional day he is forced to spend in exile. The sly man is forced to become a teacher. He is also a thief, forced by destiny to help himself by helping others. But to whom can he turn? Everyone of his own gradation is in the same boat. He must seek help elsewhere through his own efforts and labors. He can find many who have necessity, but who have not the means or the doctrine. He can find a way to entangle them in his sphere of influence so as to force destiny to provide a means for his pupils, and at the same time provide him with the necessary understanding to continue his work. He must already possess knowledge. If his pupils can be made to have necessity and not just curiosity, and at the same time be cut off from all ordinary sources of help, the sly man can, while transmitting the means for satisfying the needs of his pupils, also take for himself what he needs. In this way, he can make a necessity for himself without having a genuine self-necessity. The sly man is forced to become an expert in providing for others a genuine work wish, particularly toward just that aim for which he is working at the moment. Mechanical man has no necessity by himself and no means to discover the doctrine for himself. He cannot make a method for himself, and is in this way dependent on the sly man for his initiation into the work and for his beginning efforts. The sly man has learned that only by wishing for something greater than himself can anything of value be attained for himself. He can learn and take what he needs, providing for his pupils what they need for themselves. Of course, he must also provide them with the need which they are then compelled to satisfy. By laboring for others, we can intentionally receive for ourselves what we need. To make a wish greater than ourselves, we must learn to conform to the laws of work necessity. We can learn these laws and apply them as needed, as long as we consider and respect those others who are drawn into our work. We must learn to put others before ourselves, serve their needs before our own, in order to fully take advantage of this technique by forming study circles and giving them what we learn. A work wish can be a deliberate wish against the slave impulses of the machine. With no work wish as a centrum of gravity, we never develop the ability to exert our work will against the natural slave impulses of the biological machine. The wishes of the centers and parts of centers to remain asleep. The machine has within itself many small sources of influences, both internal and external, and without work wishing, these need not be very strong to have the machine and the non-phenomenal self along with it under their power. But the human being who is all machine, believes himself to be very powerful, to have free will and the ability to do anything he decides to do, except take out the garbage, flush the toilet, and remember to mail a letter. He is so powerful that he is only a slave to sex, drugs, alcohol, tobacco, coffee, candy, sports, and a vague sense of political issues. We must have an exact purpose. When we can understand an exact purpose for ourselves, we will be able to compose a corresponding work wish, and only then receive some beginning help toward that specific aim. No one can help us attain some vague purpose, nor can anyone tell us what wish to make for ourselves. Each one must ponder and consider his or her purpose in the work circle. Ultimately, we must learn to make a work wish from everything we do in life, to make our activities work significant, and to give them a force by wishing that the results of all our efforts be used for the greater good of all beings everywhere. Now I will give you a small work wish you can use for your work wish. When making the sacrifice of anything for your work, such as one lower emotion, one cigarette, one drink of booze, say with the fullest possible force of your inner self, "I wish the results of this small sacrifice to be used for the benefit of all beings everywhere." And make this wish reverberate in your solar plexus. "I wish the result of this small sacrifice to be used for the benefit of all beings everywhere." This special wishing can be used for anything to which we're a slave and know we're a slave, even for the palpitating loss of self during involuntary orgasm. We must examine our wishing to see impartially if it is greater than ourself. We must work not with the hope for something which is not, but with that which we already have. To wish is not a synonym for hope or desire. Your wish for a higher existence, without even pondering for a moment what it might be to be a higher being, what responsibilities and obligations might be that go along with it. Everything has a price, but you never know how much you must someday pay and in what currency, and no one else can pay for your work.